Melnick in the Afternoon. Listen live weekdays from 3 to 7 on TSN 690.
Welcome back. It's hour number 3, Melnick in the Afternoon on TSN 690. Mitch Melnick, Rod Francis, Mitch Gallo, Dave Trentadue is here. The whole gang is back together again. Agent provocateur Alan Walsh returns in about 30 minutes or so. Pierre LeBrun after 6. Noel Butler, full hour of Oranges at halftime. Soccer talk at 7. NFL, we'll get to that later as well. Saints and Panthers in Carolina at 8 o'clock here on TSN 690. Yesterday, Pierre McGuire in Washington, D.C. used the word malaise to describe the political mood. No malaise in the rink last night. Their anthem singer, Caleb Green, his microphone cut out just as he started the anthem. At some point there,
the Warriors run their record to 9-2 with a hard fought win over the Raptors, 127-1.
Now, please remain standing. Remove your caps and welcome Caleb Green as he performs our national anthem.
Pierre McGuire, brought to you by Ye Old Orchard Pub, with 6 locations in and around Montreal. YeOldOrchard.com.
Back home in Connecticut, how you doing, Pierre?
I was singing along. Ken Sabourin, who does the radio color for the Washington Capitals, was in the box with me last night. He was singing along as well. It's pretty infectious. And by the way, Caleb Green, he's a very good anthem singer. Very, very good. A military man. Reminds me a lot of Roger Doucette.
Mm-hmm.
Very similar. Roger could stir the emotion of the crowd in Montreal, and Caleb does a really good job of that down in Washington.
And, you know, I guess there are some cynical Montrealers listening. They're going, they're shrugging, they're going, we do that occasionally at the Bell Center. Deanne Beaveau starts singing, and then and we take over. There's no anthem singer occasionally. I don't know if they've gone without one yet this year, but several times in the last couple of years there hasn't been an anthem singer and the crowd sings it. But at this particular time, to hear that last night, it was it stirred the emotions for sure.
Well, it was pretty funky because I can tell you I'm down there and I know Caleb pretty well. I do a lot of games in Washington and he comes by and always says hello. He's a big hockey guy, and I could tell there was a problem because they introduce him and usually he's hard on it. And there's nothing coming. And I'm looking, and I see where he's standing. And you see the mic to his mouth, and he's trying to sing, but there's nothing coming out. So everybody jumped in. And even the players on both benches jumped in. It was pretty neat. It was a really cool thing to be part of.
Can be bounced around for Malkin. Tried to feather it too. Nicely knifed away. Here is Beagle coming in on a shorthanded breakaway. The first period. Brought on by Ovechkin, handed on to Oshie. He's got Baxter at the front, the drive! Scores! Oshie's second goal of the night. Capitals third.
Pretty tough first save opportunity for Marc-Andre Fleury.
And we don't have time to get to the rest. When was the last time a Pittsburgh-Washington matchup was this one-sided?
Probably when I was coaching, they beat us in game 4. I think it was 8-5. Dino Cicerelli, I think, had 4 goals in a playoff series in 92. That's what I'm thinking. I don't know. There's probably been some other ones, but this was one-sided, yeah. And it was right from the start. You could tell that Washington, I think I shared it with you, they had a playoff environment around their room yesterday, and Pittsburgh felt really comfortable in their own skin, but you could sense there was an anger, there was a determination, there was a focus in the Washington side that's not usually what you experience over an 82-game schedule.
Yeah, and Nick Backstrom had a five-point night.
That line was great, Mitch. I have to tell you, Backstrom, Oshie, and Marcus Johansson, who has been great for them. He's probably been their most consistent offensive player the entire year. The confidence he's playing with, unbelievable. I was talking to both he and Nick at different times during the game, during TV timeouts, but Nick Backstrom in particular, I just said, you know, this is phenomenal to watch. You guys are at another level tonight. And he said, it's about time. You know, we all have to pull the rope. He didn't say this, I'm paraphrasing, but we all basically have to pull the rope in the same direction. We have not been showing up. We need to be a lot better as a group. And they were. They were really good last night.
And, Pierre, we talked yesterday about Stamkos. We knew it wasn't good, but, you know, it was made official today. It will, in fact, be. Yeah, it's even worse. It is definitely in months, not weeks here for Steven Stamkos. Now, it's not like the Lightning haven't been through this before. How do you think they respond here?
It's going to be interesting. Obviously, Kucherov's going to have to handle a lot of the offensive burden. There's going to be a lot more. I think Ryan Callahan will probably get more of an augmented offensive role rather than a checking role. Now this magnifies, and I know he was just there, this magnifies the loss of Jonathan Marchessault unbelievably. You know, he's had a tremendous season with the Florida Panthers. And I think I told you the story where they played against them, and they really like Marchessault in Tampa. They knew they had cap implications going forward because of getting Kucherov signed, Stamkos signed, Hedman signed. They knew they had cap implications, so they were really cautious. And he eventually went to UFA, and he goes to Florida. So now I don't know, except to say that internally they're going to have to all elevate. Tyler Johnson's got to be really consistent because of this, and I think he can be. But I wouldn't be surprised to see Steve Yzerman be, you know, a little bit more proactive on the trade front. I would not be surprised.
They play in Buffalo tonight. We'll get to the Habs situation, Carolina tomorrow, and the Leafs in on Saturday. The Leafs hosting James Reimer and the Panthers tonight. But I want to get to this development in Philadelphia tonight. They're hosting the Jets.
Well, he'd be out of the lineup tonight, and that's a part of growth and development. It's also part of part of our group and in terms of accountability and in our play overall.
Coach Dave Hakstol scratching Shane Gostisbehere.
It gets a little tougher the second time around. So all the elements of Shane's game are there. But it's just continued growth and development as he continues to move forward.
Yeah, I mean, teams are going to cover you a little more. I mean, went over some video with Murph today, and you know, I think teams are a little more aware once I jump up in the play. I mean, guys are attacking, I got to get rid of the puck. So, I mean, you can see little things there, but you know, I could clean some things up in my end as well.
Look, we saw PK Subban scratched. So,
listen, I've been through this a million times. This is a non-story. I mean, yes, it's a story because he's a good young player, and everybody fell in love with him, and they should. He's a very good, dynamic young offensive player from a non-traditional hockey market in Pembroke Pines, Florida, who went to South Kent School. Played at Union College, was the MVP of the NCAA tournament, playing in Philadelphia, right where he signed. I mean, I get all the drama and everything else. This is a young player learning how to play. It's not a big deal. I remember doing this to Jeff Sanderson and Michael Nylander together at one time, not even bringing them on a road trip to Philadelphia because I was so ticked off at their lack of commitment. So, this is not a big deal, I don't think.
Well, he works really hard. You know, he's focused, and I think last year with the opportunity that he got in Montreal, he did a really good job for us, played really, really well, and I'm happy to see that he's getting another opportunity, and he deserves it. He works really hard, and he's a tough goaltender to beat when he's on, so we got to put as many pucks to the net as we possibly can and try to make it difficult for him.
There is PK Subban after being spanked by the Leafs there in Ottawa tonight, and he's talking, of course, his old teammate Mike Condon. Ottawa is really an intriguing franchise to watch. There's up and down this season. New staff, goaltending by Craig Anderson through all of what he's going through has been as good as almost anybody in the league. There's always something about them that if I was the Canadians, that would worry me.
No, their offense right now, I would tell you this. I watch every one of their games. They're offensively challenged, and they shouldn't be. But I also understand what the coaching staff, and you just nailed it, the new coaching staff's made a big difference there, except for the power play, which has been dreadful. And I'm totally shocked and bamboozled by it because that's not Guy Boucher's M.O. He's a tremendous power play coach. But they're offensively challenged, but they're putting in a footprint to be successful long-term because they're holding players accountable defensively. And this was a team that was terrible defensively, especially in their own zone last year. Terrible. That's why they didn't make the playoffs. And that's why their new coach is there and a new GM there. I think that they're doing a lot of good things, but they need to start to unleash some of their offensive power because they do have, like Hoffman, I think Hoffman's not playing tonight, but guys like Stone and Turris, Brassard. Brassard's got one goal. Got one goal. He's got to be better than that. So they got to get going offensively. But that's the only knock on them.
Yeah, we'll ask his agent about that in.
Well,
in
you know what?
Minutes.
I know you had Allen on.
Or no, he's coming on. Yeah, yeah.
Derek Brassard to me was so good last year, a career year last year, by the way, with the Rangers. And I thought this was going to be a huge opportunity for Ottawa with Turris and Brassard, 1-2 punch down the middle, and potentially Zach Smith in the 3-hole, potentially. But they like J.G. Pageau, too, who's a really good player there. But the one thing I would say is with Derek, it's almost like he doesn't want the puck anymore. He's not in New York, he wanted the puck. He was a dominant, dominant player. I'm not seeing that from him right now, and I'm a huge fan. And not only do I like the kid as a kid, like the kid a ton as a player.
Also stuck on one goal, again, as we bring him up, and he's a little older than Derek Brassard.
Well, getting chances, just, you know, I wouldn't probably hit anything right now, it looks like. But the season's long, you know, I'm trying to stay with it, you know, stay positive, like I said, as much as you can, and we'll turn around. Games 82 games season.
Thomas Mikanets again, the one goal, just 5 points. He's playing with David Desharnais, with Radulov out. Scott Terry, well, is it not Scott Terry? Chris Terry, go home again. Yes, go ahead.
Well, I'm just going to say there might be an added element here. I don't know if Chris Terry will play because the Canadiens have recalled Charles Hudon, who has 9 goals in 15 American Hockey League games.
That's interesting, especially with Terry going back to Carolina.
Yeah, that's where I was going, figuring, he'll get one more shot in that rink.
Yeah, no, that's usually where you go, but that's interesting. Interesting.
So let me get back to Pekanets, and I, you know, this could be a season-long thing. We could be talking in February about him being stuck on 7 goals.
Right.
Or this could be just a really slow start, maybe the slowest of his career.
Okay.
How do we know?
How do you know?
Yeah, give me some telltale signs here.
Here's what an old scout will tell you. How many shots per game does he get on goal on average? How many scoring chances does he create by himself? How many scoring chances does he take advantage of that are created for him? How many times do you see him in a situation where he's in a scoring chance but he misses the net? Things that you need to see, how many times in about a 10 to 15 foot area that he's around the net that he gets shots blocked. Those are things you have to watch, because if they're all negative, it means he's slowing down. And that's a problem, and that's what you need to watch. And one of the real telltale signs, and I learned this from the great Tim Kerr, who I had the privilege of coaching, and Timmy Kerr was an amazing goal scorer. He was a big, overpowering man. He was a lumberjack with skates. He really was
the best guy in the slot post-Phil Esposito.
Oh, man, he was great, and it was just such a privilege to coach both Timmy and Brian Propp at the end of their careers. But I would say this, is that Timmy used to tell me all the time, when you lose your hands and you're a scorer, you got nothing. You don't have it. It's over. And so I've always watched for that. I've always paid attention to that.
But Pekanets is more than a scorer.
He can still play.
Yeah, and he's never had that great shot. He usually can outsmart a goalie. The one goal he scored this season,
Neuvirth.
Oh, yeah, Michael Neuvirth had a terrible night, and he picked the 5-hole on him.
Right.
And that's the only time he's beaten an NHL goalie this season. He did have some chances against Luongo, but he didn't get off good shots.
But, see, this is what I'm telling you. See? You're supporting me. So when you're evaluating players, for instance, let's just say, and I'll use Scotty Niedermeyer as an example. I watched Scotty Niedermayer play for Kamloops Blazers. He and Daryl Sador were probably the two best defensemen at that time in the Western Hockey League, and Richard Matvichuk was number three. He played for Saskatoon. And Scotty Niedermayer was the closest player that I had seen to Brian Leetch since Brian Leetch, who played at Avon Old Farms in Connecticut. And Leetch, everybody marveled at Leetch. He just took games over as a kid, and Niedermayer could do that because of his skating. And when he came in the NHL, he wasn't allowed to utilize his skating. But all of a sudden, then they started to trust him more, and he started to utilize his skating. But at the end, you could tell that the skating, the one intrinsic value that he had that separated him from everybody else, was his elite skating and his two-step acceleration. That was basically gone. He still could skate. He could still play in the league. I bet he could still play in the league today, but not at the same level. So that's the kind of stuff you have to monitor when you're watching players. You have to have reference points on players, and then you have to monitor them as they go through their careers.
We've heard how self-critical he can be, and you heard it from his own mouth a few seconds ago. In your opinion, is this a physical issue, or is it a psychological issue?
With Thomas?
Yeah.
I just think it's father time. Thomas Plekanec, as a smaller player, has played a lot of hard miles and done a lot of really great things in his career. And I know I told you this a couple of years ago. Mitch Melnyk backed me up on this, that you could see he was slowing down. And so this is where you are in this situation. It's not a knock on the man. It's not a knock on the player. He can still play. He can still help you. But you're not going to get nearly the same offensive numbers out of him that he used to get. No way. I told you that 2 years ago.
And this is why, again, leading up to the trade deadline, the kind of team that they have and the kind of goaltender that they have, and what happened last year, that it's vital that they add a centerman of some note.
Well, you see, how long we've been talking about that. They need, if they're going to win the East, and they have a team that's good enough to compete, especially when you look at what's gone on with Tampa and the Stamkos situation. And the one thing that scares me about the East, there's a couple things. One, I saw the real Washington Capitals last night, and I still think they have enough to be proactive at the trade deadline. Two, the Marc-Andre Fleury situation, because not only do they have a great goalie in Matt Murray, but they also have Tristan Jarry coming, and he's just shredding the American Hockey League. Nobody's close to him in the American League. So they're deep enough in goal. They probably have the largest chip in the game to play in Marc-Andre Fleury, Pittsburgh. So their two teams, Washington and Pittsburgh, right now I'm telling you that Montreal is going to have to match pace with. And don't discount Tampa. Just don't discount them.
Agent provocateur Alan Walsh returning in about 15 minutes on Melnyk in the afternoon as we wrap things up with Pierre McGuire. And again, in case you missed it.
Yeah, I'm pretty happy. It's going to be pretty fun. Obviously, I got a lot of friends there, current friends and teammates. And like I said earlier, it's the only organization that I had ever played for until I came here. So, yeah, there's definitely some special memories there. And it'll be a lot of fun to see those guys.
Chris Terry was very much looking forward to going back to Carolina.
He still might play. I mean, there's Andrew Ghetto and Carr who could come out as well.
Well, I don't think Carr would come out.
No, I don't think they'd take Carr. That's why I said to you before when Mitch Gallo said that, Mitch Melnyk, I was like, really? They would take Terry out? Like, kid going back to his old team that he wants to probably stick it to? Not. Why would you do that? Doesn't make sense.
So, again, this is an after 5 o'clock roster move.
Mm-hmm. Right, they probably got a roster spot because of Radulov. Now it's two games, so they're probably able to put him
what
on the IR.
Gallo? Does he have the flu?
Flu-like symptoms.
Flu-like symptoms, which is...
Yeah, that could be anything. The best line ever was from the great Lou Lamoriello in New Jersey talking about a player with injury. He was asked by, I think it was Gord Miller, actually. I was standing there, and he goes, overall body soreness.
That's total BS.
Great. All right, let me finish up with this, Pierre McGuire. I'm sure you watched, if not all of it, highlights of the Hall of Fame speeches. They were really, really moving.
Lindros's was great.
Yeah, and to bring Brett on stage like that was really special.
Yeah, his brother was great. Callie Quinn's a really good friend of mine. She used to work for Ray Sherrill and David Poile down in Nashville with Hockey Canada, all the World Juniors I did, especially when her dad was coaching and the Olympics. I got to know her really well. She's a great young lady. You know what, Mitch? She could have been an Olympic swimmer. Mm-hmm. Callie Quinn, Pat Quinn's daughter, phenomenal swimmer. Really, really good.
So if we fast forward a year from now, You think Daniel Alfredson gets in on his first year of eligibility?
I think it's going to be tough because you've got Andrechuk and Recchi that might be ahead of him only because Daniel never won a Stanley Cup. I think that's a tough one. Timo Solani's a home run. He's getting in.
Right.
Right? Do you agree?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I wasn't even going to ask you about him because it's too obvious.
Timo's in. But and I think about this all the time. I've never had the privilege of being on the committee, but I think about it. If I was, how you would do it. Daniel, who I had the privilege of coaching, he won a major award. He was Rookie of the Year. I don't know first time around when you have Roenick still out there, Andrechuk still out there, Recchi still out there. You know, I see all these goalies are bringing up J.S. Aguirre, who I like a lot, and Chris Osgood.
No.
Nobody talks about Mike Richter. I mean,
Mike Richter is better goalie, no disrespect, than the guys you just mentioned.
No, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. And nobody even talks about him. So I don't know if Daniel gets in on the first shot or not. I just don't know.
Yeah. So Mark Recchi's been around, what, 4 years now waiting?
Yep.
He's a Hall of Famer. Mark Recchi's a Hall of Famer, right?
I mean, 3 Stanley Cups, 3 different places, almost 600 goals. That's hard to keep that
out. He's 12th all-time in points. Mark Recchi is 12th in the history of the NHL.
So, I mean, again, I'm biased. People that listen to our show know I'm biased. We're really good friends. I mean, I was invited to his wedding. I couldn't go because I was in Rio. It broke my heart.
He is the only player. He's the only retired player in NHL history with 500 goals or 1,500 points who's not in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, no, I think he's going to get in. So that's where it makes it tough on Daniel. By the way, can I share one little piece of news? It's going to be really cool.
Sure.
And I'm going to be doing it for you guys from there. They're doing, you know, all these 67 teams, 50 years of hockey in the NHL.
Right.
So St. Louis and Pittsburgh and Philly. And Pittsburgh's doing an amazing thing. And this is hats off to Mario Lemieux and David Morehouse and everybody involved in Pittsburgh, Tommy McMillan. They're bringing back the 91 and 92 Stanley Cup teams December 3rd. It's a Saturday night game against Detroit. So we're all going back the 2nd and the 3rd. And, you know, I was talking to Rick Tocchet last night, who was on our 92 team, and Recchi works for the Penguins now. And talking to Joey Mullen the other day, who's in Philly, and just so excited about that. You know, a chance to see those guys and get together and celebrate, which was two amazing, amazing teams, really great teams.
December 2nd and 3rd, that's going to be really cool. So
yeah, Scotty's coming too.
So, you know, yeah.
The one thing we'll miss, and everybody will miss, will be the late Badger Bob Johnson. We lost two people from those two teams that are no longer living. John Waldair, strength and conditioning coach, and Bob Johnson.
Melnick in the Afternoon. Listen live weekdays from 3 to 7 on TSN 690.